Hello, Park Street. Thanks for listening again. Today is day 11 of our journey through Lent and the Book of John. And today is a very special day because I'm here with three special guests, Allison Barnhart, Leah Bebout, and Jillian Van Dyne. For those of you, or for if there are people at Park Street who may, I mean, you are, most people probably know who you are, but in case people don't, could you give a quick recap of how long you've been coming to Park Street, who your family is? What you do?
Hi, I'm Allison. Many of you know me as Allie Barnhart. I'm married to Jason Barnhart, and we have two kids.
Happily married, though, right?
Happily married, that's yes.
It's good to know.
Barney, as many of you know him. I've been going to Park Street since, 98. That's when my family started coming. So we're going on 21 years here. And it's been a really cool thing to see the transitions in Park Street and hang out with all of our church family. So I work at Spire Advertising and I'm a graphic designer, and I think that's it.
Did you go on the Chicago mission trip? Was there was a Chicago mission trip like in the late 90s?
We went
there's probably pictures of us
there are,
as
yes.
like 15 year olds somewhere on the internet, which would be pretty interesting. So
because
I was thinking about that.
Really wasn't as big of a thing back then.
So
I'm old, Brian.
I know, but I was thinking about that. I was like, I bet Allison. I think she was on that trip.
Yeah, okay. I was. Oh, and you might see me helping out with women's ministry and doing if tables and if gathering and all that jazz.
Cool.
I am Leah Bebout, and I started coming to Park Street. It was about 3.5 years ago when Nate got the job as pastor. That's my husband. And we have three little kids, Rosie, Whitaker, and Monty. And I stay home with them currently. Sometimes I help in children's ministry. Mostly I'm just trying to get my kids to church on Sunday mornings. But we do go and visit Brethren Care, which not many people might know that we do that. But some other moms at the church bring their kids, and we go and hang out with some of the older folks who've become like extra grandparents to my kids. So that's one of the ways I've spent my time.
Would it be fair to say you're fond of the elderly?
Oh my gosh.
You love the elderly.
Yeah. When I was in high school, I had a friend who would like cut out magazine pictures of old people and tape them in my locker.
All right.
Because she knew how much I loved old people.
That's great.
I am Jillian Van Dyne, married to Tony Van Dyne, operations manager of Park Street. We've been coming to Park Street for about 3.5 years, right around the time when Nate got the position. I have two kids, Dylan and Callie. I freelance for Spire Advertising, but primarily stay at home with my kids. Cool. You will find me playing piano on Sunday mornings, or making coffee, or checking in children.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Ryan, we used to all actually work together at Red Design. Right.
That's
that
true.
Right,
I didn't plan Red that. Red. I didn't plan that out. Actually, it just organically happened.
We were the
happened.
Only girls there for a long time.
Yeah,
so true.
You guys go way back.
Fun times.
Way back.
Way back. Well, thank you for deciding to do this and humoring me. Today's passage is John 5. We're going to read verses 16 through 30. And I believe Jillian has volunteered to read.
Yep.
All right.
All right. So, because Jesus was doing these things on the Sabbath, the Jewish leaders began to persecute him. In his defense, Jesus said to them, "My Father is always at his work to this very day, and I too am working." For this reason, they tried all the more to kill him. Not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. Jesus gave them this answer, "Very truly I tell you, the Son can do nothing by himself. He can do only what he sees his Father doing, because whatever the Father does, the Son also does. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all he does. Yes, and he will show him even greater works than these, so that you will be amazed. For just as the Father raises the dead and gives them life, even so the Son gives life to whom he is pleased to give it. Moreover, the Father judges no one, but has entrusted all judgment to the Son, that all may honor the Son just as they honor the Father. Whoever does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. Very truly I tell you, whoever hears my word and believes him who sent me his eternal life and will not be judged but has crossed over from death to life. Very truly I tell you, a time is coming and has now come when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself, so he has granted the Son also to have life in himself. And he has given him authority to judge because he is the Son of Man. Do not be amazed at this, for a time is coming for all who are in their graves will hear his voice and come out. Those who have done what is good will rise to live, and those who have done what is evil will rise to be condemned. By myself I can do nothing. I judge only as I hear, and my judgment is just, for I seek not to please myself, but him who has sent me.
All right, thank you. So just for, I guess, a little bit of context, yesterday's reading, over the last, I guess, couple days, Jesus has been doing a series of miracles. And yesterday, there was this chapter 5 starts off with the healing of a lame man that happens on the Sabbath, which is how this passage kind of starts with the Jewish leaders begin persecuting Jesus for breaking the Sabbath. I guess just to start the conversation, are there any specific verses or parts of the passage that you find to be interesting or intriguing or offending or that stand out to you? Or we can start at the beginning too, I guess, if you want to just do that.
I think that resurrection language is common to us because we know the whole story now. But this is obviously before Jesus died and was resurrected. But that's still a part of the Jewish discussion. Like he says, for just as the Father raises the dead and gives them life and stuff. So like, I mean, and we know that there were ones who believed in resurrection and who didn't. There were like factions and stuff. But I don't know. I've just been thinking so much about that. Like, it's the culmination of Jesus' story on earth, resurrection, and it just, as I raise my kids and as some people that we really care about have passed away, it's been a big deal lately, thinking about, explaining it to them. And today I was listening to that worship song, So Will I, and they sing, if you left the grave behind you, so will I. I don't know. It's just like affecting me right now a lot, mm-hmm. which is good because Easter's coming and that's what it's about.
Yeah, he does seem to, like, the Jewish leaders are getting upset with him because he's doing these miraculous healings and whatnot on a certain day. And it's like Jesus kind of doubles down and just, like, goes even further. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, look, like, if you're mad about this, like, there's more coming, you know? Which is, I just think he doesn't really step back at all. He's not really afraid of the confrontation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's an urgency, too. I mean, in the Message version, it uses that word, urgent. It's urgent that you hear this.
And which verse is that? Or which part of his?
Verse 24, he says it. Verse 25, it says, it's urgent that you get this right. It's urgent that you listen carefully to this.
So when it's saying, I tell you the truth in the NIV,
mm-hmm.
that's or his. Very truly, I tell you.
Yeah.
But I love it because he's not wasting any time because he doesn't have a lot of time, you know, and I think that he is not trying to disrespect the Sabbath as a law. I mean, maybe he is, maybe he isn't trying to prove a point, a double point maybe, but I think he's just moving forward because he doesn't have a lot of time and he wants to do all the things that the Father has sent him to do. And he wants to bring the message as quickly and as urgently as possible. Another in the message too, it says, my Father is working straight through even on the Sabbath. So am I. And that was verse 17. It's like God doesn't stop working. You know, and so why should I? Because I'm doing the Father's work. So,
when I flipped through this commentary today, there was a portion about that, that like his claim to be the way he associated himself with the Father was most offensive because he was saying like he doesn't have to work on the Sabbath and I don't either, because they agreed that that was true about God, because they're like, he's holding the universe together even on the Sabbath, so like God works even though he's commanding us not to. And so the fact that Jesus was like, yeah, I'm in his category, that just like was extra offensive to them.
Oh, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean it does say verse 18, it's, you know, he's like, he not only broke the Sabbath, he called God his Father, thereby making himself equal with God. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting that you say like God has to continue working every day, I guess, in order to keep the universe running. And so, yeah, that's, I didn't think about it from that point of view, because it was like, he's like, I guess he was saying like the, my Father is always working. And I was like, well, but didn't God rest on the seventh day? Wasn't like the idea that there was, that God did, that he had completed his work, mm-hmm. and that he was able to stand back from it and just like kind of enjoy what it was. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that was before the fall,
right?
That
and now
the
it's
only
right.
day he ever
yeah, like now that I've had kids, gosh,
yeah. exactly.
And going all
there's
the time,
all this
no
work,
rest.
To, right? There's all this work to do now. Yeah,
no napping.
Yeah, no, that's it.
What stood out to me was that Jesus is. I mean, Jesus's answer is very long, and I'm just wondering what the people standing there listening were doing while he's just going on this kind of rant. You know, are they chiming in, or are they just listening? Or, but when he says the Son can do nothing by himself, this is in 19, he can only do what he sees his Father doing, because whatever the Father does, the Son also does. And he brings that up a couple other times in this passage, and it's just like another good example of community, I think, and how even God, being the Trinity, like can't do anything apart from themselves. You know, mm-hmm. they have to work together. Mm-hmm. He can't just be doing his own thing. He's doing what his Father's telling him to do, and the Father needs him to do things that, you know, he's not doing. So I just thought it was a great continuing example of like, Jesus isn't saying, well, I'm down here now, so I'm running the show. Like, he's mm-hmm. always a part of the Father.
Yeah, and it's like, he's like, kind of like, dudes, like, this is the truth. Like, I can't, like, I know it sounds crazy. The things I'm saying sound crazy. You know, this is the truth. You know, like, I am coming from God. And it's not that he's saying these kind of things to promote himself, like you're saying. He's always pointing back to God, and he's whenever people call him out for kind of, or crumble against him, saying, you know, like, this guy's saying he's God, like, who does he think he is? You know, he's like, I'm only doing what God tells me mm-hmm. to do. You know, I'm not here to just simply promote myself, but I have to also tell you the truth about who I am. And yeah, I think it's interesting that you brought up verse 19, because it's like, he's like, I'm not doing this by myself. You know, like, mm-hmm. God is a part of this. God is the source of this,
yeah.
the stuff that I'm doing.
Well, sometimes I wonder, Jewish leaders, Pharisees, I've kind of felt bad for them in a way. Like,
same here. I kept,
you know,
thinking
that
today.
I would probably have a hard time believing too at some
yeah.
point, you know. Maybe I haven't really seen the miracles, or I've just heard murmurings. I've been waiting so long. Is mm-hmm. this really all it is,
right.
or who it is? He seems to kind of be against me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's kind of like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Jesus was probably around, even before he started his ministry, he was living in that area with his family. And, I mean, at 12, right, he was up talking and teaching. So they knew who he was and probably who his parents were and stuff. So I think by this point, if they didn't see, like, oh, there's something special about this kid, this teenager, this young adult, now this man, then maybe I shouldn't feel sorry for them, you know, like...
Well, you said you agree that you were feeling...
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they always, they get a bad rap because I tried to put myself in their shoes. I'm like, well, of course I would see Jesus and I would know that, it, you know, like he is who he says he is.
Yeah.
Like,
that's how I feel.
And I'm like, of course I wouldn't miss that, you know, and I would totally be Team Jesus, you know. But, you know, they... You know, they were waiting for a Messiah that looked nothing, like Jesus looked nothing like the Messiah that they had conjured up, you know, mm-hmm. and it might be later on in scripture too, but it says that they're, and maybe the Message version too, that they were, their heads were so stuck in scripture that mm-hmm. they weren't looking up to mm-hmm. see, you yeah. know, and I think because that's all they had, you know, like this is, they had the law, you know, and this is what they were supposed to be doing and moving forward with the law. Why would they ever think that this man that's kind of turning everything upside down, you know, was actually
doing things the right way.
The fulfillment. Right. And so, I mean, I do feel bad for them because I feel like they do get a bad rap. And
yeah, it's a good reminder to let, I mean, I just feel like the key, whether it was back then or now, has to be like, a humility and a hunger. Like, if you have those things, then you're open to hearing other people out. So, like, if a Jesus, like, if we didn't have the Messiah and he came along now, if a person was hungry for God mm-hmm. and had a heart that was humble enough to be like, I could be wrong, or I'm open to something new, like, I want to hear God in this, mm-hmm. then maybe they would recognize Jesus for who he was. I don't know. But yeah, I always wondered too, like what.
Well, I like what you just said, Leah, because mm-hmm. I understand your guys' point. Like Jesus is like, he's a weird dude and it's hard to make heads or tails of him. And you don't know, like, I'm sure it's like the stuff he said and did was crazy. And it's like, it would be very easy to have doubts or say like, how can a person be God? Like mm-hmm. it doesn't make any sense. But I also think what you're saying about the Pharisees is they aren't humble and they aren't mm-hmm. hungry.
Right.
They don't want a Messiah. This guy is competition to them. He's a threat to them. They have the world set up the way they want it set up, mm-hmm. and they don't want somebody to come in and upend it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the constant conflict they have with Jesus is that they recognize that he's doing all these miracles that they can't do. He has, like, his message and his, like, ministry has a power that they don't have. And it's like, they're panicking. You know, they don't know what to do with it. And they want to get rid of him.
Which is some... Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No.
It's somewhat what the church does now when they feel threatened by culture. You know what I mean? Like, get all scared and defensive mm-hmm. and fearful. It's like, they see that culture maybe has the power to suck people in faster and more shiny and attractive ways than the church does, and maybe mm-hmm. have similar reactions sometimes.
No, I also agree with you what you're saying. This is really good. Because I do feel like it's easy to be Pharisaical, mm-hmm. right? It's mm-hmm. easy to be protective of what you believe and to be close-minded about what you believe. So I don't even, it's not that I don't think I couldn't be a Pharisee. Like we all could be like they are, right? Mm-hmm. We all can look at Jesus and just say, no, I don't like it. But I do think I think there's other passages, not in the one we just read, but it's like where Jesus, there's lots of passages throughout the middle part of John where Jesus and the Pharisees are getting into it. And he's like, there's one passage where he says, I'm not going to condemn you. Moses is going to condemn you. Mm-hmm. You know, the person in whom you put your hope, yeah. he's the one who's going to condemn you. And there's a sense at which these guys do, they're because of their consistent rejection and anger and violence and hatred towards Jesus, you know, like there is a point at which they go from like lovable losers to like, these guys don't, they're fierce opposition, mm-hmm. you know, and there is this like, pathway I feel like where if you reject Jesus long enough and long enough and long enough and consistently enough and purposefully enough, right, that does have a certain, that has consequences to your spirit and to your, you know, like mm-hmm. eventually it works on you in a negative way, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That I feel like these guys have kind of allowed themselves to get to that point where it becomes, you know, they start to drive themselves crazy into this kind of murderous rage, right? I mean, these guys put Jesus to death, right? Yeah. Like, it wasn't like, man, we just don't like this guy. He's annoying. And he posts about Trump on Facebook. It's like, no, like, they actually, like, schemed to kill him, you know?
Right.
And
I wonder if there were any, though, that, like, in private, like, so not with the others, you know? Like, yeah, like if they really allowed themselves to stop and like think
Nicodemus?
And like humble themselves, yeah, and just like, okay, so let's just play what if, you know, what if he is who he says he is, you know?
Yeah, there, like, might have been a lot of, like, political and social consequences for them if they didn't go along with, let's kill him. And maybe a lot of them, or part of them, didn't feel that way. Mm-hmm. I wonder, like, I always wonder about the very personal details of background characters in the Bible. And, like, after his death, I wonder if some of them, like, struggled for the rest of their lives or became believers or, you know, like...
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of other passages where it's like people, even the people who believed in Jesus, were kept it quiet because they were afraid of the religious leaders and they didn't want to be outcasted from the system. And so even though they did believe, it was like very, very private. Their belief was very private. Which I can understand too, because I feel like that's how I am following Jesus a lot of times. You know, it's like, as long as it's my thing, I'll keep it to myself. And, you know, I don't have to worry about what other people think about it, you know. So it's like...
We have a friend who is from Bethlehem, actually, and grew up in a Muslim family and then came to college here and came to Christ, both him and his brother, both brothers. And... the consequences are insane. Like, if they can't ever go back, and really they don't even want their family or anyone to know, because it's not just consequences for them, like life-threatening stuff, but also for their family. Not because they're Christians, but because they were Muslims and became Christians.
Right.
And it's like for real. And like, we've talked to both of them about it. They're not just being dramatic. This is like their life, and they just have to make these choices. Like, so, yeah. Like, I'm sure there was some of that going on here. I mean, different context, but, like, higher stakes than we're ever used to.
Right.
Yeah. No, I think that we don't have that perspective, obviously, at all. So, yeah, that's an interesting perspective and story. What do you guys make of all this stuff, like you were saying before, Leah, the... Verse 21, just as the Father gives life to those he raises from the dead, so the Son gives life to anyone he wants. I assure you that a time is coming, verse 25, indeed it's here now, where the dead will hear my voice, the voice of the Son of God, and those who listen will live. And then again, verse 28, indeed the time is coming when all the dead in their graves will hear the voice of God's Son, and they will rise again. How believable do you find those statements, and do you find them, like, I guess, very believable, not so believable? I mean, obviously they're a very central part of what it means to be a Christian. So I think in some cases, like, we'd all say we believe in an afterlife or a resurrection from the dead, but he keeps hammering that home throughout the whole passage. And it's like, it's hard for me to imagine that, like, really actually happening, you know? Like,
Nate has a whole theory. I hope this doesn't get me in trouble. Has a whole theory. It might be sort of like, I don't know that it's based off of, but at least encouraged by the N.T. Wright book, Surprised by Hope. He has a whole theory about this stuff that I don't even know that I could articulate. But when he articulates it, I'm like, I hope that's how it is. Like, it's all about, geez, I'm really afraid I'm going to get him in trouble or something. It's all about, like, even after death, that people still have the option to choose. That, like, death doesn't make it final, but that some people will continue to choose separation. They do it now. Why wouldn't they do it then? You know, like, I mean, he talks a lot about judgment here, too, which is also hard for me. Like, I love the verses about, I will raise them, I will give them life. But then verses about judgment, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, like verse 29, those who've done good will rise to experience eternal life, and those who have continued in evil will rise to experience judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's almost like the Pharisees, like, actually knowing the actual truth, like, the information is not enough for you to actually want it to be true. You know what I'm saying? Like, following Jesus, even if you, people who know, like, obviously there's a spectrum of people, right? People who are Christians who believe all this stuff is true, right? And we hope it's true, and we mm-hmm. want to follow it. And then there's people who don't believe it's true, and maybe want it to be true, but they just can't get there. Mm-hmm. And then there's people who don't believe it's true, and they don't really want it to be true at all.
Right.
And let's just say, for sake of argument, that at some point, right, like, we, either through death or through something in life, right, we'll figure out, like, what the universe, what's behind the curtain of the universe, right? Like, if there's consciousness or whatever after, you'll figure it out, right? Like, at some point we'll know how it works, mm-hmm, right? Yeah. So to me, I don't understand, if there are people who don't believe it's true but also don't want it to be true, just knowing that it's true may, you know, there still has to be some willingness to accept reality as right. opposed to mm-hmm. continue to just hope it's not true or to pretend it's not true. I mean, people are like, I feel like this, like, there's things that I willfully ignore all the time. You know, it's like things that I would just prefer not to deal with, or that yeah. I'd rather were different than what they are, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think to some degree, like, the Pharisees sit as an example of those kind of people who are like, saw the miracles, saw the right. stuff, and they had the evidence they needed. Yeah. At least a lot of people did, you know, there are always these, you know, different reactions to Christ, right? Like, some people accept, some people walk away, you know, mm-hmm. and there's no real rhyme or reason for why that happens, but it's like, you know, it's the same set of circumstances, and people choose how to, mm-hmm. they respond differently, you know?
Yeah. I think Jesus is asking us not, like, even if we didn't have all the proof, can we still just have faith and believe? Like, how much proof is enough? Do you need all the scientific proof? Do you need all of the see with your own eyes kind of mm-hmm. proof? Or can you believe? And that's really mm-hmm. hard for some people. It's hard for all of us.
You know? Well, I think everybody wants a different type of proof too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just thinking that, because for me, it's all like the personal stuff. Like, yeah. the moments that I've had with him, this, like, insane personal connection where I just, like, feel his presence, that for me is the proof. Mm-hmm. It's not so much, like, a sign. I mean, he says, like, the Greeks are looking for this, the Jews are looking for mm-hmm. this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I want my friends and family who don't know Christ to experience that kind of stuff, like, I can't, like, even if I explain my own stories like that,
right,
they can be like, okay, they won't, that's either they me or whatever. Like, until those. They yeah. feel that, experience it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that took a lot of pressure off me as a younger Christian, that I didn't have to prove Jesus to mm-hmm. anyone.
Right.
Yeah,
because when I was young, that's kind of what I was told.
Yeah.
Was like, I mean, not by my parents, but just the general, having like, evangelistic burden. Culture yeah. was mm-hmm. like, you need to witness to people.
I remember in third grade going to a friend's house and feeling so burdened from the church I used to go to that I needed to save her that night. So I basically told her all about Revelation, and it went pretty well.
Did you close?
I don't know that I did. And yeah, so that's the kind of, I'm like, gosh, once I learned that, man, I don't have to save people. Jesus saves people, yeah. and they can have their own experiences. I just have to live it. Mm-hmm. That took so much pressure off.
Yeah, I think we know, at least from following Christ, that he is completely committed to reconciling people, right, mm-hmm. to God, and that, obviously, as we read through the Gospel of John, like, spoiler alert, right, like, he's going to suffer a tremendous amount of pain and loneliness and abandonment and betrayal. and so to me, it's always comfort. The most comforting thing is for me, like, knowing that, and even Jesus says in other passages in the book of John, like, nobody can come to the Father unless the Father, like, allows or draws. And which is always an interesting thing, because it's like, the more I guess I've thought about my own faith journey, it's like, Jesus was like in the calling of the first disciples, he goes out, finds these guys and says, like, follow me. It's like, I don't know to what degree, like, I had to make a choice, right? Like, I had to say, okay, Jesus, I'm in. Mm-hmm. But basically every other single thing that has ever happened to me was, I feel like, was Jesus doing something to get me to a point where I was ready to be like, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. And all that stuff was not really in my control. The only thing that I had to do was finally, like, agree to go to the final, like, 1 yard. You know, mm-hmm. like, from the 1 yard line to get into the end zone. It's like, you know, it's like, God loves us and he will not force us to love him, right? Mm-hmm. But he's really good at wooing, you know, and getting people to let their guard down, you know, and he's always contriving ways to get into people's lives. You know, like he says, my father is always working and so am I, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what's he working at? He's working at healing people, you know, making things right in the world, mm-hmm. you know, getting people back into a right experience with God. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's what he's always doing. And he's good at it, you know?
Yeah. That's a good reminder that I often have to, like, bring back to my brain when I'm thinking about or praying about some people that I know who are, like, they don't just not believe in God. They're, like, angry about it.
Yeah.
These are some people that I really love. Some of whom I have to love from a distance because they're so angry. You know?
Yeah.
And it feels impossible. They feel so resolute in their anger towards him and towards Christians and stuff that it feels like, yeah, I mean, that's just not going to happen. It's like, yeah, right. He knows every part of their heart and brain, and he's so good at this. So,
mm-hmm.
but yeah. they have to make the choice. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, it's like, and what mixture of that, right? Like, so I used to believe a lot more in my own, like, free will, which I still believe in free, that I have choices about things, but mm-hmm. I guess, I don't know, as time goes by, I look back, in the rearview mirror, it seems like Jesus is just orchestrating things, right, yeah. behind the scenes, and I do make choices, and the choices I make matter, and they affect things, but there's also God, and God is, you know, he's figuring out what he wants to happen, using people's free will or whatever. That's confusing. I don't know how that works. But it's like, to me, it's like God, there's a lot of hope, because our hope is that God can save, right? Mm-hmm. And that Christ can save. Not that we have to, you know, close the deal mm-hmm. and get people to say the sinner's prayer, mm-hmm. you know, in one day. It's like, it doesn't work like that. And you can't work like that. Mm-hmm. And if it works like that, you know, there's a lot of problems. So I hope, you know, like you said, I feel like people do have a choice about whether to follow Christ or not, but I also feel like God is really very, very committed and very, like, able, right, mm-hmm. to work in people's hearts and to draw people back. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's obviously a lot of uncertainty with all that, but, I mean, I hope that it's more about what God has to do than what I have to do because, yeah, my evangelism close rate is not strong. So.
Well, the good news is, Ryan, this whole passage, the title of it, right, is The Authority of the Son. So there you go.
Right. Exactly. Cool. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate your willingness to have this conversation. It's been fun. Let's do another one tomorrow. How about that? Thanks for listening.
Should we say great? Yes. We're in.
All right, good. Thanks for listening, everybody.